Magic can sometimes seem exotic and mysterious, hidden in the far-flung lands and in dusty books.
Some of it's right here with us, in the church aisles, the graveyard, even at our kitchen tables. With roots in African sorcery, folk Christianity, native lore, and European magic, the tradition known as hoodoo, conjure, and root work is distinctly American.
And we have dedicated ourselves to the preservation and practice of this living tradition. I'm Dean, a Chicagoland spiritualist and root worker.
And I'm Dr. Hobb, a two-headed Southern country.
And this is Lamplighter Blues.
I'm sitting here broke, and I ain't got a dime. You all could put something in these dukes of mine, but don't put that thing on me.
Welcome back to Lamplighter Blues. I know we've been quiet for a while. We want to let everybody know that, no, we haven't drifted off and faded away. We've just been very, very busy. As you know, of course, both of us do exist outside of the internet radio scene. We both have things that we do. We have, well, Dean has a real job. I have something that symbols a real job.
Yeah, and my real job got real busy there for a minute, which is unfortunately why I missed the New Orleans trip.
Which is a terrible shame, because it was a very, very lovely trip, and it's one of the things we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it made me very sad.
Yeah. We don't have a definitive sort of project or topic in mind today. We're really just kind of filling in some gaps and letting everybody know that we're still around.
And also sort of to give you guys a heads up of what 2014 will look like.
Right. And we're not going to give away too much, but we can let you know a few sort of suggestions and things.
Yes, and also to kind of get your guys' input, you've seen what we did last year and what the kind of flow that we're looking for to have in the show, but if there's something that we haven't covered that you guys want us to cover, or if there's a type of show that you want to see, said we're still kind of game to do a questions and answer show. We have maybe about 15 minutes worth of one, so if people could send in some more questions, we can finish that out and maybe do that. That would be fantastic.
Right. And we're always, of course, like we always say, we're interested in hearing what you want to hear about. We're interested in knowing the topics. Some of the topics people come to us with are sort of outside the scope of what we talk about, and we try to answer those questions by email or across the blog.
Yeah, our Honey Jar page has been extremely well visited.
A lot of questions about the Honey Jar, which is good, because one of the guests we're hopefully going to be able to line up for next year is a known authority on sweetening spells, and we're hoping to be able to nail that interview down so we can talk with them. And we have a number of other guests in the works and a number of topics, so we're looking forward to bringing you some more expert commentary beyond just having to listen to the two of us carry on endlessly about things.
Yeah, we actually had quite a response when we reached out to the community to get guests for our show, so hopefully 2014 will be the year of the interview show.
Well, you know, with having other people on gives different perspective. Both of us do this stuff professionally, but at the same time, there are people that have been doing it a lot longer than us, and there are people that are more specialized than we are a lot of the time, that concentrate on more specific parts of the work, and we're always happy to have their input and their opinions.
Yep, no matter how many people you talk to, you will find eventually people have their own way of doing something in a way you never thought was possible.
Sure, and for that reason alone, you can learn an enormous amount by talking to other people in the trade.
Which is good, because I love doing it.
Absolutely. Naturally, the holidays are a busy time, and along with Dean's work schedule and me being caught up with my profession as far as my root work, I had a fairly large run of client work through the holiday season, especially around October and on through. That kept us pretty tied up. But we had also some other things that came up that were disruptive, but in a very interesting way. One of those was this year's Pagan Podkin Supermoon.
Yes, which again, so sad I didn't get to make it, but I did get to stalk you all on social media to see what was happening.
This year was a little different. Corey from New World Witchery very kindly hosted, and he expanded it to the Magical Media Conference. So he included invitations to people outside of the sort of pagan podcast scene, which is nice because we wouldn't have qualified otherwise. And he also opened it to bloggers and other sorts of magical writers and things like that. Much to my extreme excitement, he hosted it in New Orleans. And for me, any excuse to go back to New Orleans is a good reason, is a good excuse. I don't need much prompting to begin with. I've been going since I was about 17 and off and on. And I just love the place.
Well, sometime me and you will have to go back down there and we'll cause all kinds of havoc, I'm sure.
If you can cause havoc, short of setting the place on fire, I'm not sure there's much havoc you can cause or draw too much attention. I mean, the city is just sort of like that.
Yeah. Well, I remember hearing stories of you and Corey stumbling upon a grave that had a nail through some peppers and some bullets in it.
That was actually the tomb of Marie Laveau.
Oh, good.
That was... let's not start in the middle. So, New Orleans. This was back in early November. We were invited down. Of course, Dean couldn't attend because of his work, but my wife and I went down to meet everyone. We made it down on a Thursday night. We got there just in time. We got to the hotel. We got caught in traffic coming across Lake Pontchartrain and just barely made the hotel as everyone else was bolting for the French Quarter to meet our tour guide. Corey had arranged a ghost and sort of spooky tour for us Thursday night. So we get in Thursday night, and it's a very, very interesting experience I'm not an enormously exhausted podcast listener, but I've listened to the majority of them that are in sort of our area. And it's very, very strange to meet people in person who you've been listening to over headphones for the better part of the last 2 years.
Yeah. It's definitely unique. I've had the fortune of running into a few of them that live in the area, and it's just weird. You know, like, I can't believe I could see you and hear your voice at the same time. Doesn't normally work that way.
It's enormously unsettling because you listen to people talk enough, and even if they're not incredibly candid on the show, you get to where you feel like you know them. Mm-hmm. And you know a little bit about their lives, you know a little bit about what's going on with them, and then you meet them in person and you realize that it sort of fleshes out this perception you have in your head. And that was a very, very interesting experience because, like I said, we caught them in the parking lot. We kind of made a blind run to drop our gear off and get back out. But we, Corey and Lane, of course, from New World Witchery, were already there. Peter and Linda Patton were fresh off the plane. Scarlett from Like Pagan Voice was already there. I seem like I'm missing somebody, but that may have been everybody the first night.
Well, can't have everything, I guess.
Yeah. fortunately, Corey was in possession of a gigantic vehicle, so we all piled in. And
didn't you rent some gigantic economy van?
It was very large. It was very, and it was very convenient because it worked out. It was very, very helpful because, we'd just driven the better part of 8 hours to get down there, which isn't terrible, but we sure didn't want to drive anymore at the time. So to be able to just kind of pile in and let them do the driving was very, very cool.
I just can't imagine that thing was easy to drive around town.
It
seems like an old town, which is not built for an 8-10 passenger van.
He managed with tremendous aplomb, so I certainly have no criticisms about his driving. The thing about New Orleans, New Orleans is just a city like every other city, by and large. There are parts of it where you can really tell how much history the place has. The French Quarter is the first thing that comes to mind, and that is where we spent most of the time while we were there, which is completely okay with me. The Garden District's another area. You get into the Garden District, you see a lot of history. You see a lot of the age of the city and kind of it's different. You get outside of that in the rest of downtown, and it's really just like being downtown in a lot of places. Little differences, but for the most part, it's just a city. And that's not to say there's anything wrong with that. I'm not being critical of it because it's a nice place. I really like being in the French Quarter. And people, I used to have a friend that lived there. We'd go to visit, and she would not go to the French Quarter unless we were there because it was a touristy kind of place. And I can understand that too. But there are parts of Memphis that are the same way. You get downtown in Memphis, places a lot of locals don't go as often. But at the same time, it's still a lot of fun to go when you're there.
See, that seems to be a thing. You know, you talk to people in New York, and they'll say, oh, I don't go to the Statue of Liberty. Or you talk to people in Chicago, I don't go to the Sears Tower. And it is still the Sears Tower, damn it. I don't care who bought it or owned it or whatever. It's Sears Tower. It will always be that way.
It happens in Memphis, too. You have, it's like Graceland in Memphis or Beale Street. You don't necessarily go there a lot unless you have a reason to be there. And a lot of times that reason has to do with people that are visiting. They want to go there. You
exactly.
Don't necessarily go on your own. But at the same time, if you don't go, you go occasionally and you're reminded of how amazing it can be. And that's the same thing that happens in New Orleans for me because I go back. This has been about 4 years since I've been back. And you step into the French Quarter and you get out of the car. And it's like you never left. And it's amazing how much an imprint the city can leave on you.
Wow.
And I've never lived there. I almost did, but I've never lived there. But I still know my way around pretty well just because you kind of learn what's where. And it kind of, I don't know, sets a hook in you where you feel like you belong.
Well, again, very sorry I missed it. That sounds really cool.
Well, we'll get you down there.
Yeah.
We did an excellent tour Thursday night with French Quarter Phantoms. A young lady named Sandy led us around and told us a lot about the city. And she did a remarkable job considering that she had no idea the kind of group she was setting.
I'd heard this from a couple of different of the recap podcasts where you guys know anything about voodoo or ghosts or whatever, and everyone just sort of said stayed dead silent.
The funniest part was when she asked us if anybody knew anything about ritual possession. Peter Padden, who was with us, who of course has written books and done workshops about ritual possession, not necessarily in the voodoo sense of the thing, you know.
Right.
The fact that, you know, we were all very polite and she was very nice. I don't think she had any indication whatsoever of what a crowd she had. Looking
at her. Yeah, that has been phenomenal.
Just besides a couple of little things that we could have been critical about, just because this is what we do, we weren't. We were very polite. She was nice to us, and she gave us a very, very lovely tour. And I would certainly recommend their services to anyone because she did a fine job. Day two was when everybody kind of started showing up. The rest of the crew started showing up. Jillian, that's who it was. Jillian and her gentleman bushwhacked us in the French Quarter.
Bushwhacked us.
on our way to the pub to meet the tour guide, they kind of came out of an alley at us. I thought somebody was trying to mug Peter for a second because they kind of came out and latched onto him. They had arrived a day or two earlier and were staying in the French Quarter somewhere, and had they were out roaming around coming to meet us for the tour. So that's who I wasn't thinking about.
You almost misplaced the mugging you saw.
Well, I almost took Herman Sam out by instinct. Thankfully, I managed to curb that.
Now that would have been a story.
Yeah, well, he was very polite to my wife and I, so I would have felt bad if I'd loosened any of his teeth. So
I went to the Supermoot, and all I got was some knocked-out teeth.
So that's who was with us Thursday night the rest of the tour. But like I said, they were actually staying in. At that point, they were staying in the French Quarter, I believe. So they caught us there, and then they went their own way when we got done that night. And apparently this was the first year ever that everyone was apparently – adult enough to get really tired around midnight.
So yes, podcasts are wearing people down, man.
I guess we're all getting old because everybody kind of rolled into their rooms. No, there weren't any late night boisterous drinking sessions or anything this year like there apparently have been in the past. But Friday was a lot of fun. We got up early Friday. Linda Padden, Peter Padden's wife, and Corey were taking classes at the Folk Magic Festival, which is going on at the same time that we were down there. They were over at the St. Charles Hotel. I may have that wrong, but I think so.
St. Christopher.
St. Christopher?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what my paper says, at least.
That's awesome. Good. That's some actual information here. St. Charles is a street in New Orleans. That's what I'm getting confused about.
There you are.
So we all got up pretty early Friday, went back into the French Quarter, and they were heading towards the class. So that's the morning. Early that morning, we stopped off at Our Lady Guadalupe Church, which is very close where we were parked at. It's a lovely place. It's just a massive old Catholic church, and we couldn't actually go into the chapel. They were having a service, but we roamed around. They have a very nice candle grotto, and we roamed around the gift shop and things like that. But just a few blocks past that is St. Louis Number 1, and St. Louis Number 1 is one of the old cemeteries in New Orleans. And if you've never seen a New Orleans cemetery, I would recommend you go find some pictures.
You have pictures on the blog, right?
I posted a few. Peter Padden took a number of photographs. He's a very, very good photographer, and he very kindly let me use a few of them for our blog. So there are a few pictures of St. Louis Number 1 there, and they're not hard to find a picture of. It's not a big cemetery. All the cemeteries in New Orleans are above ground, because if you dig 6 feet down, you're going to hit water. this town is built on a swamp. Things buried in the ground tend to float up and drift away when it rains, which it does a lot.
That is a horrible thought.
That's a reason a friend of mine didn't stay to finish college.
Ooh.
He went down after high school to go to Tulane, and during one of the hurricane seasons years and years ago, not the big one, but one of the previous hurricane seasons, was coming down the steps from the library at Tulane into waist-deep water on campus, and a hand floated past.
That'll do it every time.
That's when he decided he would rather be back in Memphis. So.
Wow. That's just not great. Man, so, I don't know what I would do if I saw that.
So I guess on the upside to that is that New Orleans has, I believe, more bars per capita than any other city in the country. So
you can drink that memory right away.
Sure, pickle that memory right out of existence if you have to. To give you an idea, New Orleans cemeteries very much meet the definition of necropoli. These are buildings. These are standing vaults and tombs and crypts that stand up. All of them are usually lime-washed, so they're these white sort of mazes just of cemeteries. St. Louis number one's covered by a wall, probably, I don't know, a 10-foot wall or so. Maybe a little lower than that, but it's just this little patch of this little city of the dead right in the middle of a busy intersection of streets. And you go inside, and it's very, very quiet, and it's very, very cool because of all the whites and the shadows, and it's an amazing place to wander around. One of the reasons it's well known is that the family tomb that Marie Laveau is supposedly interred in is located there.
And you didn't even check to see what day she was born for me.
No, I didn't check. I'm sorry. We were dodging cemetery tours. There were three or four tours going on at the same time. And so the place was full of people. We were having to dodge tourists coming through. And so it was a little crowded. So actually getting to the front of the tomb, there's this big marble slab inlaid in the front with the information about it. It's very, very difficult to get up to it. The interesting thing about Marie Laveau's tomb is it's covered in red X's. And the floor of it, all around the base of the tomb, is covered with offerings, flowers, and water, alcohol. Things like that. And the red X's, people make the three red X's to ask her for a favor, and they will leave her an offering. And Corey and I are wandering around looking at the tomb, and indeed, there is a patch where the lime wash has worn away, has cracked away from the brick, and there's bare brick, and someone had taken a piece of heavy gauge wire or some kind and shoved it between a few of the bricks, and above that had driven a bullet in head first, looked like a handgun cartridge. I couldn't get close enough to see for sure, and had impaled a couple of habanero peppers on this piece of wire.
In case you're wondering, folks, not for anything pleasant.
No, absolutely not. I dare say whatever they were intending to do with that was not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So Corey and I were contemplating this when a couple of the tourists came up and started asking us about it. And why they thought to ask us, I don't know.
All right. I know exactly why they thought to ask Hob.
They didn't ask me, is the
they
thing.
They didn't.
And I'm not the most approachable looking person.
No, but if I saw something like that and I saw you standing next to it, I would think to myself, that guy might even put that there.
That's true. That's true. both of us, Corey and I, are both very tall. I don't look especially approachable. I don't look very especially friendly. I'm not an unpleasant person, I don't think, but I don't look very pleasant. Corey looks very approachable to me, you know, thinking about him. He looks much more normal than I do. So maybe Corey lured them in.
Could be.
He has that sort of professor air about him.
So I was just going to say, he does look exactly like a professor if you see some of the pictures of him.
He has a very erudite air about him, so maybe that'll lure people in. But they started asking us about it, and of course, we knew this stuff. So Corey got drafted as an impromptu tour guide and filled in some space, and they were just flabbergasted that this woman could be buried in a Catholic cemetery. So...
Well, she was Catholic. She just was
exactly.
Also
we very politely we very politely explained that she was a devout Catholic and maybe realigned their way of looking at the world just a little bit.
Well, and again, you know, not something that we talk about since neither of us are initiated into these particular traditions or whatnot. But voodoo is a monotheistic religion. They have only one god.
Yeah, and you'll find that's by and large that's true with all the African traditions
right.
that are practiced in the New World.
And so it's very easy for them to synchronize their higher power with a lot of the Christian teachings. It's just they have really, really, really powerful spirits that they talk to now and again.
And really, when you look at it, it's not so much different from what we do in Hoodoo, where people who have come in from a more New Age direction who kind of come back to Hoodoo or find Hoodoo really have a hard time understanding how the system can exist within a Christian framework. And it's really not as difficult as it seems.
Well, I mean, we have the spirits that we work with. It's, I guess, very similar in that respect. We have altars dedicated, or I guess shrines, if you will, to those spirits. We ask those spirits for favors. We pay them for their work. And I mean, it's a very easy working relationship that Catholics have been doing for thousands of years.
Sure. And even though with the Protestant, and really the big differences you find with the Protestantism, which a lot of Hoodoo is Protestant Christianity, the biggest thing you find is that it's separated from the saints. You don't have as much saint work. You have more working with your ancestors, things like that. And you find less of that with modern workers. Modern workers, by and large, are smoothing across Christian sort of prejudices within the partisan Christian prejudices. And you find more of us working with saints. It's not purely traditional, of course, but it's becoming more common.
Right. And, I mean, when it comes down to it, you do what works for you.
Sure. And there are things that will fly in the face of traditional work. There are things that don't exist within the practice. And we're actually going to one of the shows we're hoping to do next year, that we hope to have done this year, we just never could seem to get things lined up. We'll be discussing this in more detail, sort of how hoodoo has always contained a lot of diverse elements. And some of them are more common and more universal, and some of them are a little more peripheral, but they've kind of always been there. So hopefully we'll be able to discuss this at more length.
Yes. Which also reminds me, and I'll jump this in before I forget. We had asked a little bit ago for people who are running stores that listen to the show to send us a little blurb about your store, or if you're interested in having a short, I don't want to say advertisement, but that's sort of what it is. play it on the shows. We can play promos and one of those short sound bites. So if you're interested in having a short sound bite, I think we've contacted a couple of people that we would like to have, and we actually started getting a couple responses. So in the next year, you'll hear some familiar stores, maybe some unfamiliar stores that are people that we like what they do and think you should sort of check them out.
Right. It's very, very, I'm reminded more and more, you see things come across, people writing about or talking about. It's very, very easy to be hornswoggled by people who are doing unethical work. And one of the things we want to do with the show, besides giving people education, is to help them contact people who can help them get a hold of people who are honest and who are good workers and ethical workers who can assist them. So if we can do that by offering up some little advertisement spots, we will certainly do so.
Absolutely. So again, if you're interested in putting this stuff forward, send an email to lamplighterblues@gmail.com and let us know, and we'll try and work something out.
Right. I won't beat New Orleans to death much more, so we don't depress Dean too terribly.
It is really sad.
We spent
I ended up working a 65-hour week that week.
Sorry, pal. My wife and I spent the better part of Friday roaming around with Scarlett from Lake Fagan Voice. She was also our roommate while we were there, and we had a fine time dragging her all over the French Quarter. She trusted us to know what we were doing, and I don't think we disappointed her too badly, but we had a fun day with her. Saturday was the actual meet and greet, which was sort of stillborn. We didn't have any fans show up for that.
Ooh.
Not a one.
That might have really depressed me, actually.
Yeah, there wasn't not a single listener showed up that I was aware of, not that spoke to me. We were at Arzuli's voodoo shop in the French Quarter. We will post a link to them, a very nice place that gave us the run of their shop for a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. And despite us not having anybody else show up, we had a wonderful time just kind of hanging out and just talking, which is what we're best at, more or less. And, I mean, by then, Kathleen Borealis had joined us from Borealis Meditations. Francesca and Dagon from the Texan Heretics had joined us. Velma Nightshade from, of course, Witches Brouhaha and Assigning Brouhaha had showed up late the night before, and had joined us for that. And we had a couple of people who couldn't make it. Last minute complications kept a couple of potential guests from showing up, which was very unfortunate. But we had a full place. We had a lot of fun talking. And then after we spent a lot of time there, everybody kind of bolted. Everybody just kind of scattered to various parts of the French Quarter to do what they felt like doing. And my wife and I actually wound up spending the better part of that day with Peter and Linda Patton, which was extraordinary.
Again, very, very sad I missed that. That would have been a lot of fun.
extraordinary folks, and we had a very, very fine time. And I felt very fortunate to have spent the better part of the day, pretty much starting at the hotel and then the car and then at the Urzuli's and then all over the French Quarter talking to Peter Patton. And he and I have a great deal of common, and we get along very, very well. And his wife is a lovely, wonderful lady. And they sort of adopted my wife and I. They just really took to us, and we felt very fortunate to kind of be to get to hang out with them.
Yeah.
But that evening, Linda Patton had sorry, man. But that evening, Linda had a class or two to finish up at the Folk Magic Festival, so we all hiked over there with them. And they very, very kindly introduced me to Mama Star, so I got to meet Mama Star. And very briefly got to meet Orion Foxwood. It was a lot of fun. And I would really like to go back to that. I would really like to be able to make it to the Folk Magic. I've been trying to get to the Folk Magic Festival to take classes for the last couple of years, and just hasn't worked out. So I may have to try to sort that out, because that was a very, very interesting experience getting to meet those very fine people.
Yeah, that's something they do every year, though, right?
They've done it every, this was the fourth or fifth, I think. I'd have to double check, but it seems to be doing consistently well, and they seem to be keeping at it.
Yeah.
Mola Star is a hoot. She is a very, very nice lady, and she's very, very fun, and she really knows what she's doing. And I would really enjoy having the chance to speak with her some more. So that was that was a great experience.
Hopefully, when we try and contact her to see if we get her on the show.
Yeah, I'll do that. And I met Ryan Foxwood very briefly in passing, and he complimented my blog, and that just blew my mind that people are actually reading it.
Well, it is a place to be for folks who haven't checked it out. Hob does a lot of book reviews, in particular from Scarlet Imprint. So if you're looking to kind of get a better understanding of what those books contain and how just unbelievably amazing they are, I actually just got my hands for a late birthday gift on Apocalyptic Witchcraft, and holy crap. That book is blowing my mind every time I read it.
And that's really mind-blowing, tends to be the thing you tend to find when you start reading those books, especially if you've never read them before. They've covered a really diverse sort of area of topic. This last year, a lot of the publications that came out in 2013 were dealing more with traditional witchcraft, and they really, really put out some amazing stuff. And their first publication for next year is already lined up, and I'm eagerly waiting for that one.
Is that something that they've released what it is to the general public, or?
Yes. It should be shipping in January, late January, early February. It is the last volume of Jake Stratton Kent's Encyclopedia Goetia that previously has included his translation of the Grimoire and Verum, the true Grimoire, and his two-volume Geosophia, which is a massive two-volume study of the history, sort of the history of Western magic.
Oh, wow.
Which is extraordinarily complicated to read the first time and very, very enlightening. But the last part of that set series is coming out. It's the Testament of Cyprian the Mage. It's another two-volume set dealing with – it's his sort of dealing with the Testament of Solomon and one of or an amalgamation of the books of St. Cyprian.
St. Cyprian, as I'm sure we've brought up him a few times, is – sort of become my patron, my go-to guy when stuff gets thick, and just generally a really awesome spirit if you can handle the type of initiations he's interested to toss your way.
There's some weight there, yeah. He's
Those books are really intriguing to me, but they also kind of freak me out a little bit.
I've not had a chance to read the books of Cyprian the Mage because I speak neither Spanish nor Portuguese, and primarily that's what those books are translated in. And most of those books came off the Iberian Peninsula, and they're very, very difficult to get a hold of in English. There have been rumors and suggestions from a couple of other occult publishing houses of releasing good quality English translations of the books. None of them have come to light yet. So as near as I can tell, the first one we're going to get is going to be Jake Stratton Kent. And if you're not familiar with Jake Stratton Kent, if you have any interest in Western magic at all, he is a gentleman worth reading. He's an Englishman. He is a very, very educated and very, very active practitioner of the Grimoires, especially the system built around the Grimoire and Verum. And he has done some amazing work. And like I said, I'm really, really looking – I've thoroughly enjoyed his previous publication. I'm really looking forward to this next one.
And this is actually something, speaking of these grimoires and stuff, that it's a lot – or there's a lot of stuff that actually is part of the hoodoo tradition that sort of comes from some of these books. The ones that we've mentioned so far, not so much, but things like the 6th and 7th book of Moses and a lot of these older – I don't even know what you call them. They're not exactly chap books, but –
you know, a lot of these smaller scale books. You had a lot of things come in that were used in hoodoo that weren't extensively known about or weren't widely used. They were used in spots, but they weren't necessarily even used the way they were intended to use. You had a lot of conjure people who used the seals from the Key of Solomon. Mm-hmm. They would actually use the Solomonic seals that you could buy, and you could still buy printed on parchment paper. Even though they didn't get into the really heavy sort of spirit conjuration part of the Grimoires, they would use the symbols. They'd use mosaic and Solomonic seals. The Long Lost Friend, which was published in the United States, which is primarily a powwow book, was a common book being used by a lot of conjure people. Like you said, the 6th and 7th books of Moses.
And those had various seals. And what is it, the Lesser Seals of Solomon that had all the planetary seals that a lot of folks use on candles and whatnot?
A lot of the planetary seals you'll find in either the key, the greater or lesser keys of Solomon, you'll find planetary seals used in both. While you don't have a lot of really heavy traditional sort of ceremonial magic used in hoodoo, like you will find a strain of that in powwow among some hexdoxers, hexameisters, but not so much in hoodoo. You will find that these books did have a life here, and they were being read by people. Egyptian Seekers of Albertus Magnus was being used, things like that.
So all you gotta do is toss Hava a little bit of something, and he can just run with it.
Well, I like the Grimoires, and I do study the Grimoires. We don't talk about it as much, we don't talk about it as often, because it's not in the scale of the show. But it is one of my other veins of study besides just folk magic, just the hoodoo part of it.
Well, I've started to see those seals come up a lot more recently.
Yes, and you'll find people that use them. People that kind of use them just because. And then you have people that actually know what they're doing. And those seals are certainly not the entire life of the symbolism in the Grimoires, but they are the ones that are most readily available for a lot of people. And as my study of powwow advances, too, you'll find more ceremonial magic in powwow a lot of the time when you get on towards some serious hex doctoring and that sort of thing. So I've been studying more about that.
Yeah, well, that might be make for an interesting show to sit down and talk about those books. We'll have to talk about that sometime.
I would like to. We didn't mean to find someone who'd be willing to sit down and talk with us maybe about the advent of the magical books as they came into conjure practice. I'm also interested in doing a show, various shows, talking about traditions that have influenced hoodoo over time. So maybe we can get some other gentlemen on, or ladies and gentlemen on, to discuss some other traditions that have impacted hoodoo practice over the years.
I would definitely be interested in putting together a show of maybe even a couple of segments on Braukerai to show a lot of the influence there. And just in general, it's another one of those traditions where the person who takes that on, who decides this is what I'm going to do, becomes that pillar of the community in a very similar way as a conjure doctor, where people come to them with their problems and they're sort of there to make sure that the people around them are taken care of.
Yeah, and it actually follows a very similar sort of dichotomy and that sort of very fine balance where in Braukerai, in powwow, you have just a Brauker, just a powwow who helps, who heals, you know, men, who heals livestock, who helps the community. And then you have the hex doctors or the hexenmeisters who sort of slide towards doing what ought not be done for the sake of helping people. And these are the people that get more into the ceremonial end of things. And the people who are very heavy, almost fulfill the role of witch finders, where they'll actually actively combat hexerai, will actually combat malicious witchcraft. And in the same way that some conjure people, you look at people like Dr. Buzzard historically, who were held in great awe and a little bit of fear, you have that same sort of public opinion that would settle down on these hex doctors who could still heal and help people, but they were thought of as slightly shady because of what they knew or what they might be capable of.
See, that's sort of where, and I don't know about that last, you know, what they might be capable of part, but that's sort of where a lot of the stuff from my practice sort of falls into, is people will end up coming to me when stuff just falls apart, and sooner or later we can find that something happened, someone gave them something, and ever since I got this one thing from this person, I just don't know, you know, don't know if we're on good terms or not. My whole life went to shit. Huh. Okay.
This is something you and I have talked about. We talked about it on the show. We talked about it in private before. You don't realize how much stuff is still being done, how much bad people still do to each other until you start trying to be, until you become one of the people that has to fix it.
It's really kind of sickening, to tell you the truth, but at the same point, it's cool to be able to have the skill set needed to put those things to right and to resolve those types of conflicts.
Absolutely.
And most of the time, you don't even have to go out of your way to whack somebody over it either. You can just sort of rip off everything that they laid down and then They get real mad.
They do. You don't tend to find people as emotionally invested in just complete kind of from hell to breakfast devastation anymore. You do come across it, but it's, I don't think it's quite as prevalent. I don't think we have the same respect for it that we had people had 200 years ago.
Well, thank God for that, because that would make my job a whole lot harder.
It still happens. It still happens occasionally, but I agree. By and large, we're able to concentrate primarily on beneficial work for people, which is very, very, which is very nice at the end of the day. But at the same time, you know, some of us are inclined to sort of do the ugly part of the work, and I think there's still a need for it.
There is still a need for it, and if you'd like to speak to that gentleman, you can email him at drhobb@hainthouse.com.
But speaking about talking about Brock, I do have a couple of gentlemen who'd be interested in coming on the show, so hopefully we'll be able to line up an interview with them.
Excellent.
And if we get an interesting response in that, we might even try to have a little segment occasionally talking a little bit more about powwow as my powwow practice is starting to grow a little more. We could conceivably branch the show out just a tiny little bit if people are interested in hearing about it and teach a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. And to tell you the truth, this is something I've been thinking about for a bit. For whatever reason, I sat down and decided to do a bit of research on the term lamplighter, what these guys did, and sort of their many different functions. Because you have the concept of a man who's going around, and there's obviously either oil lamps that he would have to light, or he would actually set up candles, and so he would go through the whole town, and he would basically bring light. And a lot of times, these guys had sort of two functions. One was to light the city up, and two was that they would walk the entire city. They would know the entire city. They would know what was supposed to be there, and more importantly, what was not supposed to be there. And so they became sort of these de facto watchmen that, you know, they would light their candle, go, okay, that door's not supposed to be open. I've done this 1,000 times. I need to go tell somebody. And so to me, that kind of role was interesting when we apply it to the show, because it puts us in kind of a unique position to both give information and to bring that light to show people this is, you know, the traditions that we know, this is how at least we do them and how we've perceived them, but also to kind of steer people in a direction that will take them to where they want to go and sort of, I guess, keep them safe. I don't know. Maybe this analogy is falling right apart.
Well, the point of fact is that the name of the show wasn't accidental. It wasn't a purely cosmetic choice. You know, it wasn't purely for the sake of the poetry of it. There was an intent in there, and I think we're kind of holding to that thus far. And hopefully we can continue to do that.
Right. So I guess, in short, if there's other traditions that would bring someone to a place they need to be, I'm all about talking about it, I guess.
I think the position it puts us in, both of us are extremely dedicated to preserving hoodoo in a traditional practice, because we both do that. But in a way, it's not all that we do. There are other things that we're practicing, there are things that we're studying, and inevitably, I think we can keep a certain degree of it. We can keep it separated because it needs to be kept separated. But at the same time, it's part of who we are, it's part of what we do, and we may very well wind up talking about it some more as we go.
Right. But that is to say, too, when we do speak on it, we will definitely lay the lines in the sand. This is where this is, and this is, you know, this is one side of this, is the other side of this. Neither of these two things blend unless they actually did.
Right. And but the long and the short of it is that hoodoo does not exist in a vacuum. It is what it is, and it's being practiced still. It is being practiced by people who respect its tradition and respect its roots, and we're not going to change that because we respect its roots, we respect the tradition, and we're going to do our best to maintain that. But at the same time, it's part of the American folk magic, and other things are being practiced here, and they exist at the same time. So it might be time for us to talk about some other things as well. We'll just have to see how it shakes out and kind of how interested people are.
Absolutely. And so with that, if you guys have, again, something that you want us to talk about, or you know, a thing that, or a question that you have on your mind that you want answered, at least, you know, with the answer that we'll give you, go ahead and email the show, lamplighterblues@gmail.com. Hopefully 2014 will look, well, strange and unusual, but also fun.
That's the long and the short of it, I suppose. So we've been busy, obviously. Dean's been busy with work. I've been busy with studying my kind of work. We had New Orleans in November. December, of course, was lost pretty much entirely. The end of November and all of December was lost pretty much entirely to the holidays. The fact that we're able to record this show and hopefully get it out before the end of the year is strictly sheer stubbornness on our part. I know you were out of town for a while for the holidays. My family was out of town for the holidays, and I was tied up with Christmassy stuff. And it was just holiday devastation, more or less.
Right. But the New Year's looking good. You know, we have you coming into Rockford here to do some readings and a workshop at Cleo's Rome Apothecary. So,
yep, the work continues. Work continues. Second weekend of January, I'll be back up in Chicagoland, Cleo's in Rockford, which is one of my very favorite places to be. This will be my first time at the new shop, which makes me very, very happy. They recently relocated Friday and Saturday, what is that, the 8th and 9th?
I believe so.
9th and 10th. Friday and Saturday, second Friday and Saturday of January, I'll be at Cleo's all day doing readings.
10th and 11th.
10th and 11th, okay. I'll be at Cleo's doing readings, card readings, bone readings, and then that Friday night I'll be doing an introduction class for powwow introduction. And then Sunday afternoon I will be up in Freeport, Illinois, which is a ways out, and doing...
Oh, yeah.
I will be at the Mystic Hollow in Freeport doing an introduction class on Hoodoo. Dean and I will both be doing that class. And that'll be my first time at that shop. I'm looking forward to meeting those folks and getting the chance to do that.
Yeah, well, it's going to be cool to finally, be able to, expand to be in demand in a bunch of different places. And mm-hmm. That's kind of always been my dream, is to have a bunch of places that, you know, want us to come in and do our thing. So.
And it's always nice to get to meet new people and to kind of get to see what's going on and to get to spread kind of good information around, because there's a lot of bad information being spread around. So it's always nice to be a part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I can't say, speaking of all this too, I can't say enough about the folks that run Cleo's. They've been amazing to both you and I, getting spots for you to read and opportunities to do workshops and stuff too. So
yes, they've been remarkably generous to me time wise and just very, very friendly to me in general. And it's really my home away from home when I travel up there to do that. It's a place I feel very welcome, and I'm always very happy to have the chance to go back.
Yeah. Since the owner has become my spiritual mother, it seems. So I'll have to make sure to, to help her out in any way that I can. So mm-hmm. Hopefully if you guys decide ever to come into Rockford, that you'll be able to check that out.
I would certainly recommend it if anybody that can make it by. It's a great shop. Like I said, I've not been in the new space yet, but I'm certain that the feeling of the shop hasn't changed, even if the location has.
It's actually a bit more homey. You'll have to see it. It's really incredible, actually.
Good. I'm looking forward to that. And it's just, less than a fortnight. I'll be braving the icy north again to get up there for that.
Oh yeah, it's going to be good. Wait till you see the temperatures when you come down.
Admittedly, I live in the deep south. I live in semi-rural Tennessee. It doesn't get super cold here. I mean, we get below freezing during the wintertime. It's not like New Orleans, where I know people have never seen snow before. No, it gets cold here. The coldest I've ever been in my life was January on a Chicago sidewalk. And yet I'm doing it again, so it does lead one to wonder.
It just seems to always fall that way, because I normally get Hop to do a trip about every quarter, give or take. So when we can fill up his reading rosters and he could do checkups and stuff for people he's doing work for up here. And for whatever reason, he always seems to fall in January, which, given if you live in Chicago, between November and February, it can be negative 50, so...
Yeah. And I don't normally mind the cold. I enjoy the cold. I don't get nearly enough cold where I live at to make me happy. I like cold weather. That was just devastating, the cold. it was just diabolically cold. Waiting to catch my bus home last January. It's about the coldest I've ever been in my life. So I suspect we'll get another good sharp kick of that.
Yeah. Well, there was that time when you came up and we had that ridiculously crazy heat front that came through.
Yeah, I do tend to bring unusual weather with me when I. Yeah. And then in the summer when I was there in June, it was unseasonably cool. So.
Yep. Ah, the joys of Illinois.
Well, I mean, and the weather's not much better here, so that's how it is.
Let me tell you about that when I was hearing a couple of my friends in Tennessee hanging up clothes on the line when it was negative 20 here.
First day of winter, the winter solstice, I had to turn my AC on. It had gotten uncomfortably warm and humid.
Yeah, boggles my mind.
You know, it was like 78 degrees and 100% humidity. We finally had to turn the air back on for the first day of winter. And it's cold again now, sort of. But it was that was weird.
So if you happen to be anywhere near the area of Rockford, or you throw that in the old Google and want to get a reading from Hob, there you go. January 10th and 11th. Although, really, if you want it, you better call the shop, because he tends to fill up real fast.
If you're in the area or think you're going to be in the area, I do try to keep my visit schedule. I put them on since I've been dragged back, kicking and screaming back onto Facebook. I do post them there. And I try to put them on my blog when I think about it. And you can always email me if you're curious. If you're going to be in the area and you want to see if I'm going to be around and you're interested in meeting us, we're always happy to meet people.
Absolutely. Maybe we can convince a couple of podcasters to come down and meet you.
Yeah. I think they probably had their fill of me at this point. Not sure how that's going to go.
Gotcha. All right, well, you got anything else?
I don't think so. I know this show was kind of a ramble. We didn't really set out with any particular thing in mind. We did want to remind everybody that we were here, that we were not going anywhere. We just became extraordinarily busy, and that may happen from time to time, and that's simply the way of things. We'll do our best to continue putting out shows. We'll do our best to continue bringing you information and guests that you may have heard elsewhere or may not have heard before, and we'll do our best basically to be constructive members of the magical community, which is really what we set out to be in the long run.
Absolutely.
These few months we've been doing this has been tremendously rewarding. We thank you for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful new year.
Yes, have a happy new year, and we'll see you next year.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Lamplighter Blues. Our show can be found at iTunes and lamplighterblues.wordpress.com.
You can also reach us via Twitter at lamplighterblue, that's with no S, or at lamplighterblues@gmail.com. Until next time.
Don't put that thing on me. Don't put that thing on me.